Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who has both casual and formal golf shoes, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Well, we've now had the season's first major at the Masters and the tour's first exhale at the Heritage down in Hilton Head. We'll talk both today with Ron Green Jr., who was on site for both. Also today, we'll check in with the head men's golf coach of the East Carolina Pirates, Andrew Sapp, on his team and their progress this season. And wow, it's hard to believe we're only a couple of weeks out from the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club. As such, never a bad day when we can catch up with tournament director Gary Soba. But we begin today with Ron Green Jr. Ron, before we get to Hilton Head, I want to back up a week because we haven't talked post-Masters. And there were a couple of things that came out of that I found very interesting. One, I guess I did not realize that Patrick Reed was, for lack of a better term, so disliked by his peers. In fact, I would have thought pretty much the opposite based on his performance in team competition. Is this something that the rest of the world was aware of and I just was not?
Well, I think somewhere in the middle of all this, I think he has come to be more liked. He's become more a part of the team. I think he arrived on tour with a complicated backstory is a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
There are stories about what happened at Georgia, stories about how well he did or didn't get along with teammates at Augusta State. And, you know, when he won, obviously his family history came up. Is he the most popular guy in the room? Probably not. But I think one thing that sort of, I mean, he played great at Augusta. And one thing he was up against in some ways is, think about this, he's got Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler. Take out Tiger Phil, the three more popular golfers in the world, and he's the guy who ends up beating them. So there's some of that. But, I mean, he is, you know, I mean, a lot of it, if you've been followed closely around and been out on tour, I mean, I think most of it was fairly well known. I mean, that he's his own guy. He goes his own way. He's confident in who he is and what he does and how he goes about it. And I think he's gotten better with the media. I think there's some he's been sort of suspicious or guarded, I guess is the right word, because of some things that have been written. And I don't know if he's best buddies with anybody. He's not going to stand to just hold court a lot of times. But, I mean, he's a terrific player. And, I mean, in some ways I feel bad that side of his story at least shared the spotlight with his victory.
I do too. It seemed to me that if this was going to come up, it should have and could have come up a lot earlier. And I it just had a bad smell to me of someone trying to take away from someone's biggest moment in their career. And I was searching for a reason why.
Well, I think the connection that made it sort of newsworthy or made it more relevant was the fact that his family lives in Augusta. He attended school there, and then he happens to win in Augusta. I think that you put all those together, and then some people reached out to the family who's been pretty reluctant to talk, and they shared some of what they were dealing with. And, you know, I don't know all the stories. I hear a lot of things this way, that way. How much of it really is true, I don't know. Obviously, there's friction. You know, I mean, I guess he had his parents taken off the golf course at the U.S. Open one time. They've got no contact there. It's an awkward situation. And, you know, it probably took away some of the celebration for him because it was sort of a distraction. But good for him for going off wearing that green jacket everywhere he could. And, you know, if I had one of those, I would too. And, I mean, he's the Masters champion. And, yeah, I don't know that that's going to be the only major championship he ends up winning in his career.
No, it did not surprise me. I actually thought he was going to have an easier time on Sunday than he did. Who knew that Jordan was going to play like he was going to play and Ricky was going to be like that on the back nine? Because I knew that the moment would not be too big for him based on what we'd seen in Ryder's Cups and President's Cups, especially Ryder Cups. Those have been some pretty big moments, and those moments were not too big for him. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer. Our guest taking dead name. One more thing about the Masters win and specifically reaction of his peers. I would have thought if there was anyone on tour, not necessarily close to, but someone who might have been a little more effusive with praise or congratulations would have been Jordan Spieth, for the simple reason that that's the ride or die. That's the guy who goes to war with Patrick Reed at his side every year, whether it be against the world or against Europe. And his reaction underneath the tree when posed the question about welcoming Patrick Reed into the fraternity of Masters winners was lukewarm at best, and that struck me as odd. Was that odd to you?
I think Jordan was. That's in a moment where he had a chance to shoot 62 and come from 9 back and win the Masters, and was right there and hits that tee shot to hit the tree on 18. I think he's all caught in. He's locked in his world, his disappointment. I mean, he's been so high and taking himself to a chance to do something nobody really thought was possible and then have it sort of ripped away at the last minute. I think it's more about where he was personally in that moment, less about Patrick Reed. I think when Jordan gets back out on tour playing in the Zurich Classic with Ryan Palmer, I think the question will come up. I imagine you'll hear a slightly different answer because I think the emotions will be a little different and won't be just sort of caught up in the moment of what he had done, which I think pretty much drove what Jordan was talking about at the time.
Ron, we've seen Ricky Fowler before on the weekends and on final days at majors have chances on paper to win these championships, but we've seen him sort of play not to lose, and it cost him, whether it be at Erin Hills, whether it be at Valhalla or at an Open Championship a few years ago. For the first time, I'm really starting to totally buy in to Ricky Fowler could actually win one of these things based on his performance on the back nine at Augusta, where he did not shrink in the moment and, in fact, had to birdie 18 to make Patrick Reed win. Do you feel better about Ricky's chances going forward?
Yeah, I think that was, if there was a question to be answered, that went a long way toward answering it. I think he had a terrific weekend. I mean, he kept pushing. He talked going prior to the Masters, and then while he's there, that he needed to be more aggressive in final rounds and not sort of protect his position and wait for something to happen and sort of make something happen. I think he tried to do that. And it was a difficult day for Patrick Reed because he was playing out in front, and Ricky pushed him to the limit. I mean, for a moment there, you thought, okay, he's going to be in a playoff. But, yeah, I think, what has he got now? He's got, like, 8 top fives or something in major championships already.
Right.
I think the bigger part of the battle, maybe not the big part, but a huge part of the battle in winning a major championship is you have to put yourself in position to have the chance. So many guys never even do that. They play their way out of it so early. And, Jack Nicklaus used to say it was easier to win majors because he knew a lot of guys would take themselves out of it. I think Ricky has learned to put himself in it now. Now he's got to still go win one. If we're talking 5 years from now and he's got 11 top five finishes and no majors, then you're starting to wonder. But I think if I'm Ricky Fowler, I'm frustrated, yeah, but I have to still be pretty confident that I'm going in the right direction.
Moving on to last week, if there's such a thing as an inanimate object being able to physically exhale, I always look at Hilton Head as the PGA Tour's one big great exhale every year. Is it as relaxing for you guys in the media who cover it week in, week out, as it appears to be for the players?
I think the whole vibe down there is very relaxed. Like the tour itself, I think a lot of media people take the week off, too. I'm not sure they realize quite what they're giving up by not being down there because it's really terrific. And, it did not have a lot of stars in the field, like other than Dustin Johnson, a few others, but it had a lot of depth to the field. You look at Satoshi Kodera, who wins the tournament. He's 27th in the world. Now, we might not have been terribly familiar with him. He sort of introduced himself at Erin Hills last year. But, I mean, this guy's a really, really good player, ranked higher in the world rankings than a lot of much more famous players. So, while it's unfamiliar, and Siwoo Kim, too, Players Champion. It was maybe not the twosome you would have immediately guessed in terms of fan recognition, but really, really good players. But it's a really good tournament. What they've done with RBC, with Boeing, and the crowds they had out there through the week, especially Saturday, they really had a big gallery out there Saturday. And I was surprised Sunday, given the early start with the, you know, pretty menacing weather forecast, many more people than I would have imagined would have gotten up on Sunday morning to have been out there. So, yeah, I think if you're wondering, you know, if you can't go to the Masters, but just get sort of the sort of Jones in to go to a golf tournament, going to the Heritage is a very good way to go.
Were you out on the course? I thought that that Boeing flyover was one of the coolest things I'd seen in a while. Were you out on the course when that happened?
Yeah, I actually went out to stand at the 18th tee as it comes up the Calabogie Sound from down that end and flies up the 18th hole. You know, they've done it for two or three years now. And it's really cool. I mean, everybody stops. The players stop, and it sort of goes up and does a couple loops around. But that big old plane comes over, and he turns that thing right down over the golf course at about probably 1,500 feet or something, starts rocking those wings. It's like, you know, you can't not look. And then the second time around, he just takes it almost straight back up into the sky. It's a cool thing, and you know, people start gathering early for that.
It's a really big bird. That's what freaks me out. Is this not a, you know, just a little Air Force or Navy jet flyover? That's a really big bird that's doing maneuvers right over your head. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. It's very rare that this happens, but it does happen. You guys who cover the tour week in, week out, you get a tour media guide early on in the season, and you may scan it, but for the most part, it's in your travel bag, your work bag, and I never see any of you consult it until, I imagine, something that happens on Sunday. Perhaps you're getting ready to write the story about Luke List or Ian Poulter, and then all of a sudden it becomes Siwoo Kim and Satoshi Kodaira, and you guys have to be scrambling for the media guide a little bit.
Yeah, or in Kodaira's case, you're scrambling for Google because he was not a tour member.
Oh, that's right!
So you're trying to learn as best you can, you know, and you go back and look. And look, he's played in a lot of major championships and made the cut in a lot of them. And, you know, he's sort of quietly built himself, built his resume. I mean, he's obviously had not had PGA Tour membership until it came with this victory, and he jumped at the chance to become a full member. But it's, you know, you talk about the game being global, and I think he's another example. It's interesting, he's a little older, but he talked about Hideki Matsuyama being sort of a model for him, an inspiration. He's seen how successful he has been, and I think he sees him, he may play golf a little differently. I don't know if he has Matsuyama's power, but I think he's a really, really good player who, you know, he's going to become a more familiar name to us over the coming months and years, I think.
You mentioned Kodaira, you mentioned Matsuyama, both of those from Japan. Siwoo Kim is from Korea, and someone asked me on the golf course on Sunday about a name, and I remember him coming back, but I don't know what his status is right now. The name is Sangmun Bae. Where is he? Isn't he back on tour at this point?
Yeah, he's back. He finished his military obligation. He's back. He hadn't had a whole lot of success. I think he's trying to play his way back into form, but yeah, I think he has full status right now. He's just not maybe quite played the way he wanted to play, but he has served his commitment and is back playing professional golf.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr., Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. You mentioned that the Heritage, it has some big names, but not the really huge names. And none of us, I think, know for sure the 2019 schedule, but we're starting to get an idea based on what people are saying. We know that you're going to have the WGC. We know that Houston is now going to be replaced by San Antonio before Augusta. And I think that this might benefit the Heritage in this respect. Houston bent over backwards to set up their course as best they could to mimic the Masters. Where they are playing that San Antonio tournament is a four-day grind in the hill country of Texas with the wind and whatnot. Very often, single digits under par wins that tournament. I don't think they're going to have the field that Houston does, and therefore, you know, what the problem with the Heritage is people playing 4 weeks in a row. I think that the Heritage may be able to get a better field starting next year because of people taking the week off between the WGC and Augusta. What do you think?
Well, I do think it's going to change who plays the week before the Masters, because you're right, Houston sort of sold itself on, all right, you want to get ready for the Masters, we'll give it to you right here. I don't think San Antonio can be that. I think it's something very different. I do think it will adjust who plays. I mean, some guys just like to play their way into a major championship. Phil's talked about that and others. Some guys don't. So I think as this whole schedule unfolds, I think there's going to be a lot of sort of recalibration of schedules, because you know, when you start putting that Players in March and suddenly there's the Masters in April, then the Players comes up, you know, and you're going to have like, whatever, 3 or 4 weeks between the Players in the U.S. Open. I mean, it gets very busy and fast. I think, you know, some of the Texas tournaments are in a little flux right now, Houston and Colonial. I think it could help them. They're fortunate with their RBC ambassador, Dr. Johnson, being one of them. He's already said he's coming back. And you know, when somebody asked him again Sunday afternoon, so did you come to like the golf course anymore? He's like, I really like this golf course. You can tell. I mean, he was genuinely serious about it. He said, joked about a couple holes he didn't like because he played them so badly. But, he played better than his score indicated at Harwoodtown. And, you know, they got him coming back. And, you know, I mean, through the years, some guys come in, some guys go out. And it's just, never going to have the major championship feel. But there's so many good things about it that somebody's going to have a lot of good players.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, we'll check in with Andrew Sapp, head men's golf coach at East Carolina, as he takes Dead Aim at Pirate Golf, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park, and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park, and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Andrew Sapp is in the home stretch of his first year as East Carolina head men's golf coach, and I had the chance to catch up this week prior to their conference tournament. Coach, when last we spoke, you were still kind of feeling your way as the new coach for East Carolina. Looking back, what was the hardest thing you had to do or overcome?
The hardest thing was probably just getting to know 10 brand new guys. For me, they'd all been here except for our freshmen, and so it was just a matter of really all fall getting to know your players, their personalities, what makes them tick, know their golf games, and see how we can help them individually the most. So that's always the most challenging when you've got 10 guys who you basically show up and they're already there ready and waiting. So but it's been fun, a lot of fun. It's been great to spend time with these guys and work with them. But that's probably the biggest challenge when we first started was getting to know all the guys.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking that too. The level of, not to begrudge other sports like football where there's, you know, 70 people or whatnot, but the level of intimacy between a coach and players on a college golf team, it's pretty high. We're talking usually about 10 people or less, and you're with them all the time. You come in, none of these guys are quote unquote your guys. What are the first steps? How do you go about building that trust with them that's so vital going forward?
You know, it's just spending time with them. Coach Rule and I, we play with the guys almost every qualifying round that we play. And when you're doing that, you're spending 4 hours with two or three guys at a time, and you're talking more about things other than just, hey, nice 5-iron shot. You're getting to know them, their families. You're getting to know their interests, how they're doing in school. So I think playing with the guys a whole lot has helped us not just get to know them as people, but it's also helped us to get to know their golf games well. So, I mean, because you're kind of there not only playing beside them, but kind of studying what they're doing, where their strengths are. You can then go back at practice the next day and say, hey, remember that shot you tried on 15? Let's work on that because you didn't quite pull it off. Let's figure out a better approach. So it's really been spending just time with them, both whether it's dinners over at my house after practice or if it's just out on the driving range, spending time with each guy individually. That's how we've gotten to know them.
Andrew Sapp is the East Carolina head men's golf coach. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Looking at the season a little bit, a highlight team-wise from the fall, as I was looking at it, a really strong fifth place finish at the Wolfpack Invitational. I'd be curious to know, though, what it was like to be on the course with the guys from Carolina, only this time you're wearing purple. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it is odd, mainly because we didn't see them that much.
Oh,
because we weren't paired with them ever. So first day was a shotgun, so we were with two teams all day long for 36 holes, and then we weren't paired with them the final round. So I saw all the guys, and they played well. I think they finished second to NC State, but yeah, I saw them during warm-ups and maybe after the round and got to chat with them and catch up. But we've also played with them in February down at TPC Sawgrass. So I probably spent a little more time with them there than I did at the Wolfpack.
Coming out of the fall, and I do like the way your team is trending. We'll talk about that in a second. But coming out of the fall, what were your thoughts on your team and where you thought you were heading going into the spring? Did you feel like, okay, we've got some good mo, we're moving in the right direction, or were we not quite where we wanted to be? How did you feel?
I think the fall, it's always challenging. You've got new coaches, getting to know new players, and I feel like there were times where some of them might have played a little more nervous than they should have. There were some times where seniors might have been, you know, not just looking at this year, but looking at what am I going to do next year when I graduate? Am I going to play professionally? And those types of things. So there might have been a little added pressure that they put on themselves in the fall. But I think this spring, we've really started to play a lot better and really seen a lot of improvement. And a lot of that, the guys worked their tails off over the winter months in between the fall season and our spring season. And our fall, unfortunately, was just really short. We were finished in the middle of October, so we didn't have a whole lot of time really to work with our guys once we got here. So it was good to be able to work with them over the winter more so, and just we've been able to see a lot of good growth and improvement.
One of the first tournaments you played this spring that I really wanted to ask you about, more on a personal level than anything else. I know in the past you've always gone to this tournament, and I was glad to see that you went, and that's the Puerto Rico Classic. What was that like? What was the condition of the course, the country? What kind of shape is Puerto Rico in right now?
You know, it was great to be able to go. Because number one, tourism is the main revenue source for that island. So for us to be able to take 15 teams to that tournament, to go to one of their hotels and resorts and golf courses, really in a way to support them, was great. But honestly, when we got to the resort, we were the only people at the Wyndham Rio Mar, except for electrical workers.
Oh,
the hotel
wow.
was full of electrical workers trying to bring power back to the island. But outside of that, it was just 15 men's golf teams. So it was definitely a lot quieter than it had been. Typically, you see families at the pool and at the beach, but it's open for business now. March 1st was when that resort opened up for business, and they're slowly but surely recovering, and they're a strong people. They were really pleased to see us there, very happy that we were back, and they'll continue to rebuild. I know it's a tough ordeal for sure, but Puerto Ricans have the desire and the resolve to work their tails off to get their island back to the way it should be.
Andrew Sapp is the head men's golf coach of East Carolina. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. From Puerto Rico on, you've really trended in the right direction. A fifth out of 18 teams, 7 out of 15. First place out of 9 at your own tournament. And I thought a really good finish last weekend at a good tournament at the Stitch Intercollegiate, finishing 4th out of 12. Other than the obvious, you know, scoring better, what do you think has really clicked for your guys this spring?
I think it's just been, we've started to get more consistency in the lineup. I mean, we've played a lot of different guys in our fifth spot, And now Tim Bunton has kind of emerged out of Concord as our fifth player, and he's helped out with some good scores. But it's really Patrick Stevenson and Blake Taylor and Tim Conover have kind of led this team. It's really kind of crazy. In 30 rounds, there are six shots that separate those three guys.
Wow.
Which is, Blake Taylor's had 2,180 shots, and Tim Conover's had 2,186, and Patrick's right in the middle at 2,183. So we're kind of a three-headed monster. Jackson Spires has been our foreman, and he's put together some really good rounds. Two rounds under par last week at McGregor Downs. So it's been good to see. I think we're starting to peak at the right time, getting ready for our conference championship next week.
Now, it's no surprise that you see a college golf team and you have four guys who are consistent in your top four, but that is a little unique to have three guys who are separated by that few shots, isn't it? I mean, normally there's a little bit more of a hierarchy, maybe one or two guys who are a little bit better than the other two. That's really strange, is it not?
It is, no doubt. I mean, typically college golf teams have a pretty distinct number one player, and then the other guys kind of fall in line. But for us to have three guys basically as our one player is definitely unique. But they've been pushing each other. They've all averaged under 73, and they've been getting better each and every week. So it's been fun to see those guys push each other to try to see who's going to have the low stroke average. But yeah, it is unique. I've never had it in my coaching career, three guys that close together.
I'm glad you brought up Tim Bunton. I had it here to ask him about you, because looking at it, it seems like in the spring he's definitely giving you some good rounds. And I was talking with Coach Cabbage at Charlotte and your friend Coach DiBattista at North Carolina about this. I think it's got to be a really hard thing when you come in as a freshman, first time away from home, having to get acclimated to college life, the rigors of an academic schedule, and then, oh yeah, being a Division I athlete. There's a lot to deal with early on. And for someone to, by the time you get to the spring, to have sort of made that adjustment and be a contributor, that's a pretty admirable thing, I think.
It is. It's one of those things that everybody adjusts differently. And it's not always easy. Sometimes the adjustment is social, you know, being away from home for the first time. Sometimes the adjustment is academics. Other times it's just golf. And Tim's adjusted really well. It took him a little bit of time. For him, it wasn't academics. It was more just golf, stepping onto a new level. And he struggled a little bit in the fall with his golf game, but he worked his tail off. He's one of the hardest workers on our team. And he works so hard over the winter break to get to where he is now, and couldn't be more proud of him for doing that, because it's easy as a freshman when you haven't started in the fall to kind of get your chin on your chest and feel bad for yourself. Instead, he just found it as his motivation to work harder to crack that starting lineup and then stay there.
I think my biggest adjustment was laundry, Coach. That was huge.
Yeah, that's definitely an adjustment for a lot of people, no doubt.
Andrew Sapp is the East Carolina head men's golf coach. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. You mentioned both with Tim, and you were talking about your team as a whole really busting their tail once the fall part of the season ended in October and through the winter months. What sorts of things did they do? Were they playing tournaments? Was there just a set schedule of things that you had set up for each individual to do, drills and whatnot? What did they do to really improve like that?
Well, we're limited as coaches to what we can do in the off season, but we spent a couple hours a week with each player individually, or had them in pairs, and just worked on different aspects of their games that they needed to work on. But then they would work on their own. They would just practice on their own. They would go play on their own. And with the course setup that we have in Greenville, they've had an opportunity to play a lot of different golf courses over the winter. And then really, we had a lot of guys play in one or two amateur tournaments over the holidays. And that's really a great way for them to kind of keep their game sharp, but also validate how much their hard work is paying off over the winter, because it's a long stretch from the end of October to the middle of February to not have a golf tournament based on the college season. So I admire our guys for going out on their own and scheduling tournaments over Christmas break, whether they're tournaments in Miami or tournaments in a couple of good events in North Carolina at Country Club of North Carolina, or the tournament at Pine Wild that the Carolinas Golf Association puts on. So really, that's the big key, is if you can keep yourself fresh, if you can continue to play and play under the gun, that helps get you ready for the spring.
Coach, this Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday is the three-day conference tournament at Innisbrook and Palm Harbor. You got four courses down there, including the Copperhead course that the tour plays, and that thing is just one nasty mother. Which ones are utilized, and what's the format of the conference tournament?
You know, we play all three rounds on the Copperhead course. So
wow.
That snake pit's going to be there for the getting. And it's so awesome for our players, because you get to play a tour venue, a place that the guys see on TV. And it's just an awesome opportunity to kind of be able to compare yourselves to, hey, this is what Tiger did on this hole a couple of weeks ago, or this is what Paul Casey did when he won. So it's really neat opportunity for our conference to get to play at the Copperhead course, just because it's so well known and the best players in the world play there a month or so earlier. It's 54 holes. Five players from each team play. You count your best four scores each round. So you get to throw out your worst score each round.
So it's all medal play. There's no match play component in the third round?
Nope, no match play. All medal play for us.
All right, and get you out of here on this. I realize no coach is ever satisfied. But looking back from day one on campus to right now, has it been a successful year for you in Pirate Golf, or not quite up to your expectations?
I think we've grown and we've gotten better. So in that sense, it's been successful. We'll find out in a couple weeks if we've reached our goal of making NCAA regionals. Right now, if Tom Lenardi was talking about college golf, we'd probably be in the first four out. So we've got some work to do to get in the last four in. It has been successful because we've had a lot of fun. Coaching transition can always be difficult for players, but these guys are fantastic. Their families are wonderful. The kids are great, and it's been a lot of fun, and we've seen guys get better throughout the year. So from that standpoint, it's been very successful.
Telling you, that guy knows what he is doing. The ECU golf program definitely in good hands with Coach Andrew Sapp. And up next, he's about to have his first tournament as director of the Wells Fargo Championship. Gary Soba takes dead aim at the best event Charlotte has, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're just a couple of weeks out from the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club, and I had the chance this week to check in with first-time tournament director Gary Soba. Gary, my favorite question to ask someone in your position is this one: where are we now?
Charlie, I think we're in great position. You know, I think we've got great field. We've had great sales pre-tournament. We're close to, you know, in terms of economics, we're in a great, great, great position. Golf course is in great shape. They put some fertilizer on it yesterday. It's really going to pop. So I think from every angle, we're in really, really good shape.
I was thinking about it like this. We've just got a couple of weeks before the Wells Fargo Championship, and it's kind of like that time as a parent when you're maybe a week out from Christmas and you think, okay, I'm ready, but then you keep remembering and finding little things that you've forgotten about. What's the latest little thing that you've discovered had slipped through the cracks?
Well, you know, that's a fair question. I feel like, you know, we're going through our checks and balances. I feel like, you know, we've got everything covered right now. There will be things that fall through the cracks. So I can't list specifically anything, you know, an example, but you know, the next 2 weeks is all about execution. So the thing is going to be here a week from Sunday night, kind of our first uh, our draw party, and you know, we're working on trying to heavily promote the concert on Wednesday night prior to the tournament. So there's just a lot of activity, but it's all good.
Translated, Gary Soba's a better tournament director than we are parents. You just heard it right there from him.
No, I guarantee that's not the case.
Gary Soba's the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. We've spoken about this before, but your background is in college athletics and broadcasting. I can't imagine that these two could possibly have much in common other than perhaps soliciting sponsors. What have you discovered to be similarities between the two gigs?
Well, you know, it's a really interesting question. I get asked that a lot. This is very similar to an opening football game or an opening basketball game. You know, the sport changes, but some of the things, when you look at parking, you look at concessions, you look at ushers or volunteers, you know, you look at media, there's a lot of things that are very, very similar. It's just a different sport. Now, certainly there's a lot more intricacies with golf in terms of, you know, some of the marshalling, the PGA tours, and getting the players and, you know, getting Mercedes for the and vehicles for the players and making certain everything works with hotels and airports. But there's a lot of similarities, too.
Wells Fargo Championship is an established, great tournament event. Even so, I was kind of wondering, you know, the course those boys saw in August at the PGA was hell and gone from what they were used to. Was there a little bit of recruiting or maybe re-recruiting of some players fearful that that was what the course setup was going to be going forward?
Well, a lot of the guys really liked it. They knew it was a major, and they knew it was set up differently. So, you know, there's players like Jason Day, who many times has not played here, loved the golf course, and, you know, is coming back here. So they understand it's, you know, it's a different golf course. You know, certainly it's rye grass, so that changes. You know, they know we've softened number one and four, so that has changed. So I think we've got the word out, and yes, we've spent, you know, I've personally been to three tournaments, and our staff's been to others. So we always recruit, but this golf course has got, you know, such a great reputation. People love playing Quail Hollow.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the field. It seems like every day I get another announcement, and I know I'm going to leave somebody out here. The other day we found out Mickelson's coming back. He uses this tournament as his personal ATM, even though he's never won it. Jason Day, you mentioned. Masters champ Patrick Reed, I believe I saw. Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy. Defending champ Brian Harman, who used that win last year at Eagle Point to springboard into a great year. This is a really, really strong field heading into the week before the TPC.
Well, Charlie, I like to catch you because you missed the number two player in the world, Justin Thomas.
See, there you go. I just I knew I was going to leave somebody out. I was just making quick notes on that question, and there you made me sound like an idiot. So that's cool.
But Hideki Matsuyama, another top 10 player. You know, then you got a foreign fleet. You know, Tommy Fleetwood, Alex Noren. These are all top 20 players that can really, really play, that love playing here.
It's the, you know, pink elephant or Bengal tiger in the room, a past champion, Big Cat. Any word from Team Tiger, which is just a few weeks to go?
Not yet. I emailed with his agent on Monday. No word yet. You know, we're hopeful. You know, we feel good, but certainly we don't have anything to announce. And, you know, we hope that might change, but no guarantees. And certainly, you know, we've hosted him here six times, and we'd love to have him back.
I feel, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to go on record as saying I'm going to be surprised if he doesn't play, especially he's healthy, and he will have not played since the Masters and going into the TPC. I'm going to go on record and telling you, Gary Soba, that I'm going to be surprised if Tiger Woods doesn't contact you. Gary Soba's the tournament director of the Wells Fargo Championship, our guest taking Dead Aim. You know, one of the things that I've always liked about the powers that be at this tournament is that they always, no matter how successful the year prior, always do a legit postmortem and ask themselves, okay, how can we get better? What did we need to improve upon? Now, last year, I realize it wasn't your baby. It was run by the PGA of America. But were there things that perhaps they did or that they incorporated that hadn't been tried before at the Wells Fargo Championship and that we may see to enhance the experience for this year's tournament?
I think one specific example is concessions. They did a great job with what I call grab-and-go concessions, where you pick it up and your throughput is much better. So from our patrons' experience, you know, it's going to be getting concessions. They'll be in and out much more quickly than they have in the past. You know, I think our Uber experience is much better. They drop off right here at the golf course versus the PGA was, you got dropped off, then you had to be bussed over. So, you know, I think we've kind of gleaned what they've done, but we found that most of the things that we did previously are kind of best practices, and certainly we think we can get better on the concessions angle.
Yeah, no, the you know, is it, and I was the one who was very skeptical about the way the PGA handled their parking and busing. And I thought for the amount of people they were dealing with and how it all went, it went rather smoothly, much to my surprise. But I am very, very happy that things are starting to go back a little bit more to normal as far as transportation goes. Give me something new. What is going to be out on the course this year that, as a tournament spectator, someone who comes out every year for this tournament, I'm going to go, cool, I don't remember this before.
There's some small things. For instance, the mobile device policy with the PGA Tour has changed. You can take video, you can take photos, you can text. You just need to have your phone on silent. You know, on Saturday night, for the first time ever, we're going to have a concert. It's immediately following the round. The Blue Dogs are going to play. You know, there'll be a derby party. You can have a heck of a lot of fun. You know, roughly 6 o'clock, the last putt should go in. The Blue Dogs will play till about 6:40, then we'll air the derby, and then they'll play, continue to play. So I think a concert is certainly new and significant for us. We'll have a Topgolf Expo, Charlie, so you can come out and test your talents, and I know you're very talented. I've seen you play, but you can win prizes and gifts and discounts the next time you go to Topgolf. And maybe one other thing is our patrons have asked for, you know, diversified food. We're going to have 5 food trucks, so if you want tacos or pizza or barbecue, so forth, in Green Mile Village, we're going to offer those things.
I was going to say, Green Mile Village always has a tremendous selection of food and a wide variety, so looking forward to that. You'll have to forgive me. I'm still scraping myself up off the floor after living through watching people go crazy at the mobile device policy of the PGA of America last year. Did you say that during tournament rounds, not during practice rounds, but during tournament rounds, as long as the phone is on silent, you can take pictures and video?
Yeah, you heard me correctly. And I think that's a significant change. I think people will really
endorse that. Huge. That is huge. In fact, one of the things that frustrated me about that policy last year was, you know, I'm all about growing the game and kids coming out to the game. And this kids' lives are tied into these phones. All they want to do is take pictures and video and post them to social media. And it seemed like the PGA of America just got really heavy-handed and sort of was, you know, anti to all of that. And I'm so glad to hear that. And that makes me very happy, Gary.
Oh, I agree. I think it's a very important step. You know, and I also want to remind, you know, our patrons, kids 12 and under are free. And in fact, we've got a kind of a more robust exhibition on Wednesday. We're having a Succeeding Together youth exhibition where we're using 5 tour players and having an exhibition on Wednesday afternoon. So we look forward to having everybody out. We love having children out, and they do 12 and under get in free with an adult paid ticket.
Let's talk about ticket availability. How are sales going? Are there packages still available? Are all tournament days sold out? Still tickets remaining? How does all that work?
Couple things. Our premium tickets are very, very limited. We're almost sold out on premium tickets, so I encourage people to order our Champions Club. We only have Sunday left, and it is very close to being sold out. Our Executive Club is very close to being sold out. We do have a new premium area, and it's a fantastic seat. It's called The View. It's right behind 18. It's where the member seating was during the PGA tournament, but I mean, you look right down the barrel of 18. It's $1,000 per week. We just introduced 2 weeks ago. We're about a third sold out. I think we'll sell that out as well. So as it relates to the daily tickets, our thought right now is we probably are not going to see sales. We found that the golf course can handle big crowds. So, you know, we hope to you know, sell a heck of a lot of tickets Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But we don't anticipate right now announcing a sellout because we know the course can handle it.
Fantastic. Give the website where everybody can get all this information and order tickets.
WellsFargoChampionship.com.
And get you out of here on this. Gary Sobas, the tournament director for the Wells Fargo Championship. I only ask this because I love to be evaded. Contracts are coming to an end. This event's the best damn thing on an annual basis that this city has. We know there's a President's Cup coming. We know that down the line. We know that we'll be revisited by the PGA. I feel certain about that after last year. But I'm talking about annual PGA Tour golf in Charlotte. How do you feel about that prospect going forward? Positive, negative, too close to call?
Charlie, I left a great career and bet my future that we'll have annual golf in Charlotte. So I'm going to still take that bet, and I think we'll have annual golf here.
He is the tournament director of the upcoming Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow Club. That's Gary Soba. I'd also like to thank ECU head men's golf coach Andrew Sapp and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and perspective this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show, wonder what all we've covered? No worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice most weeks, just minutes after this terrestrial radio version of the show finishes airing. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Weather-wise, spectacular weekend in the Queen City to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt our souls and break our hearts. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.